Bonte, can you hear me now?
Oh, yeah, very well. Very good.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, so we do one time the homage to the Buddha. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. And today is June 15th, 2015. And we are about to start with a new course in reading Pali, lesson 11. And before we start, I have to mention I'm still expecting tests, written tests, to come in from two people. One is Venerable Sagarakantu. And June, I sent you a second version of the written test. I think I sent you two versions that should come in. I sent you earlier, but then I changed to break the written test into two sections. So I should get those two back from you when you do them.
Okay.
I'll send them again just to remind you.
Thank you. Okay, I also owe you a written test.
Oh, I didn't get from you. Okay.
Lesson 6 and 7. I did the last ones online.
Yeah. But the second part you didn't do online.
From before. I did only 6 and 7, I think I owe you.
Okay.
I'll send them soon.
Okay. Okay, so I told you already that we've reached what I call the hump in study of Pali grammar. So now we're sort of going down the slope. You know, we've covered all of the main points, but there are still like little odds and ends, little pieces that are coming in the next two lessons. Okay, so now we'll take some of the grammar. This is on page 152. These are imperatives. So we've already had several imperatives. We've already had the imperative covered in several lessons. So we know that the second person imperative singular, the common form, has the termination, the suffix is he. So if I say give, I'm instructing you to give, I say dehi. Or if I'm saying that you should speak, I would say basahi, speak. Or katehi, speak up. Or karohi, do this. But there's another second person singular imperative, another way to form it, which is just with a short A ending. And so here they give some examples. Okay, so we have the verb labhati, to get, to obtain. So if I'm saying to somebody, get something, one way to say it is labahi. Another way to say it is the short form. This is labha. Okay, if I want to say to somebody to see something, I'm telling you to see. Normally, how would I say that? The long form. See.
Pasahi.
That middle A is a long A. Pasahi. The short form would be
Pasa. Pasa.
With a short A. Pasa. Here they give for the verb sunati, to hear. So the long form is sunahi. The short form, suna. But I don't know if I've ever seen this before. curious whether that form occurs. Oh yeah, it does occur. Okay, like, okay, tena hi tvang gotami ubayata damang suna. Okay, so he's saying in that case, gotami, the name of a person, I think, listen to the Dhamma in both places. Then we have it occurring several times. Okay, here we have pasahi, but I think the short form is much more common for the command to see. Okay, so this short form comes, I think, only with verbs which have the present stem in the short a and the long a. Doesn't come in the verb forms that take, for example, like deseti, to teach. In that case, you would always have desehi, somebody giving a command to another to teach. You don't get dese. Okay, so this is the first grammatical point. Now, this is the second grammatical point. This is a somewhat difficult one. Here, Bowie, are you there?
Yes, Bante.
Okay, I'm going to need you to translate to make this clear. I'll tell you when to translate. Okay, there is a conditional form of the verb, the normal conditional sentence takes the form if I do this, that will happen. If you do this, that will happen. So this is very common, and that conditional uses the optative. The optative, I think sometimes it also uses the future. So this is that's the simple conditional.
Okay, you want me to translate now?
Okay, you could translate that. Okay, but now the grammar is introducing another type of conditional. This is actually, it should be called the hypothetical conditional, or even the contrary conditional.
One day that broke up. What was that last word?
I call it the hypothetical conditional or the contrary conditional. This is a conditional that is contrary to fact. Maybe Bowe, you'll have to explain that. Okay, I'll give you a contrary conditional in English. Let's see. If I could play the violin, I would perform in a concert. Okay, this is contrary to fact. I can't play the violin, so I'm not going to play in a concert. But I'm setting up a conditional. If I could play the violin, then I would play, I would join a concert. Or if I could play the violin, I would apply for a job in the orchestra. So that's in English. Okay, so in Pali, there's a special way to form a contrary conditional. And that is explained here. It says, it looks like, if you look in the book, page 152, it looks like a blend of the future and past tense forms and is formed as follows. Okay, first, it has the prefix A, the augment A, which is like the aorist or past tense. And then it uses the affix or infix ISS, which normally is used for the future. Maybe Bowe, do you want to translate this so they can read? It's in the textbook. Okay, and then the endings for the hypothetical conditional are shown in this little table. And the note says, note that these resemble the endings of the past tense, or the aorist, except that the third person singular ends in the short A rather than the long A. And the third person plural has ungsu. Okay, now these forms, they're not very common. It's very rare, in fact. But we do meet them on occasion. And so you should be able to recognize them. If you're not aware of this form, then when you come across it, you're just completely confused. It's like if you saw a creature walking with the head of a cat and the body of a dog, you'd be confused. So this form is like the head of the aorist, but the body of the future and the ending, the tell of Inaurus. So here they give us an example rather than just look at the table. Okay, we go to 2.2 on page 153 on the use of the hypothetical conditional. It said that this conditional is used in forming if-then constructions. Usually, the verb of the if clause is in the conditional, and the sense is commonly hypothetical or counter to fact. That is, there's the implication that the situation described has not taken place or could not take place. The verb of the then clause may be optative, and the implication is then that the whole situation is hypothetical. Okay, they give us a sample sentence here. Okay, this is from the Udana. So it says, here the Buddha is talking, it's a sutta on Nibbana. And so the Buddha says, no che tung abhavisa ajatung abhutung nai ida jatasa bhutasa nisaranang panyayeta. Okay, so here we have first the hypothesis, which is contrary to fact. I'm getting feedback sound from the computer, so please mute your microphones, except for Bowie, who has to speak. Okay. So we have the word che, which means if. The word no is the negation, not. Then we have the word for to the verb, the form of the verb, which means to be, which is here abhavisa, which means would be, but it's negated by the no. So if there would not be a jatung, that means the unborn. This is Nibbana. And abhutung means that which is not become to be, which has not become. So if there were not the unborn, unbecome, you see, there is, according to the Buddha, there is the unborn, the unbecome. So this is a negative hypothesis. But then from the negative hypothesis, the Buddha draws the conclusion, na ida jatasa bhutasa nisaranang panyayeta. Naida, what is naida? It's na, the negative, plus ida, which means here. And the y is just put in order to make it easier to speak.
So it's not here?
Not here. Jatasa, from what is born, bhutasa, from what has become, nisaranang, escape, panyayeta, would be perceived, would be known. Okay, so putting it together, if there were not an unborn, unbecome, here an escape would not be known from what is born, what has come to be. Bo Wei, do you want to explain that in Chinese for them? Okay, there's another example on the bottom of page 148.
Bante, before you move?
Yeah.
Quick question. So when I first read that sentence, it was not clear when it said jātasa bhūtasa, that it is not in the sense for the born or for the become that there would be a escape.
Yeah, the thing is, yeah, this is another point. Jātasa bhūtasa are, are genitive forms, but they're used in an ablative sense. The word nisarana, in English, we say escape from. But for some reason in Pali, it comes out the word escape will take the dependent noun in the genitive case rather than the ablative case. It's just the way the
Latin. Sense of a dative. Sorry,
Bob. Excuse me?
It's not in the sense of a dative.
No, no. Okay, look on the bottom of page 148. The sentence begins, Rupang cha hidang bhikave. So Rupang cha hidang, well, let's start off with start off with Rupang Bhikave Anatta. Rupang Chahidang Bhikave Atta Abhavisa Nai Idang Rupang Abhadaya Sangvateya. Okay, so Rupang is bodily form, and Anatta means non-self. Not the self. Okay, so he's saying bodily form is not the self, Okay, bodily form is not the self. Then rupangcha hidang bhikave atta abhavisa. Here we have the hypothetical conditional. So if this form, atta abhavisa, the self were, you see, abhavisa is the hypothetical verb. You see, it has the prefix a, like the aorist. Then it has the isa, like a future. Bhavisati is the future. And then it has the short a ending, like an aorist. To close it. Okay, so if, O monks, this form were the self, then we have the conclusion. Nai idang rupang abhadaya sangvadaya. So na is the negation. Idang rupang is this form. Abhadaya, this is the dative, to affliction. Sangvadaya would lead. So if, O monks, this form were a self, this form would not lead to affliction. You see, but then we have, that is the statement contrary to fact. But then just below, we have the statement which is in accordance with fact in line 2 here. Yasma cha ko bhikave rupang anatta tasma rupang abhadaya sangvattati. So yasma means because, O monks, form is not self, tasma, therefore, rupang, form, abhadaya sangvattati, therefore form leads to affliction. Any questions about this?
Ante, where is this reading from? I don't understand the abbreviation. Where is this text found?
This one on Anatta?
Yeah, this number 4.
Yeah, this is from, the abbreviation here is Mahavagga. That is the first book of the Vinaya Pitaka. But the same sutta is also found in the Samyutta Nikaya, chapter 22, sutta number 22. What number is it? It could be somewhere in the 50s.
Okay. Thank you.
Or in the
22.59.
Oh, that's right. Where did you get that?
Here.
In the 50s is right.
In the 50s.
Well, I was right. To that extent, I was right.
Samyutta Nikaya?
Samyutta Nikaya, yeah. Okay, let us go on. Again, these forms are not very common, but very seldom you'll encounter them, and then you should be able to identify when you meet them. Okay, the next grammar section is on, I think we've already had this several times. This is called the prohibitive particle, ma. So this particle, ma, is used to make, we could call this a negative imperative. So the positive imperative is do that. The negative imperative is a prohibition, do not do that. So to give the command do not, the word ma is used. So here's some example. Ma gacha. But what is a bit puzzling here, maybe Bowe, you'll have to explain this in Chinese. For some reason in Pali, in the negative prohibition, the verb is often the aorist. But in that case, the aorist doesn't refer to the past. It's referring to the present. But the aorist form is used. Bowe, can you explain? Okay, so here they give examples of both types of verbs used in the negative prohibition. First, with the regular imperative, so we have ma gacha. You see, do not go. Ma evang danang data. Do not give alms in such a way. Here, the verb gacha and data, those are the normal present tense imperatives, but they are governed by the negative particle ma. So don't go, don't give. But we could also have the negative particle ma taking the verb in the aorist form. And we could see this in the next passage. Alang Ananda Ma Sochi Ma Paridevi. Here the verb Sochi and the verb Paridevi, those are the aorist based on the verb Sochati. So we would have the present tense would be sochati. One sorrows. Oops. Paridevati. One laments. Okay, so one sorrows, one laments, that's the present form. Then the aorist is sochi. And paridevi. Okay, so here the Buddha is giving a command or a prohibition to Ananda. Ma sochi, do not sorrow. Ma paridevi, do not lament, do not weep. Okay, but even though the aorist is used, it's not something in the past, but Ananda is right there in front of the Buddha. So it's something Ananda should not do at the present. And then occasionally, ma can also be used with the optative in the sense, well, also it's a negative prohibition, but just used with the optative rather than the aorist or the present. So here they give one statement, I think it's from the Dhammapada. Ma pamadang anuyunjeta, do not indulge in indolence. Okay, any questions on this?
What does indolence mean?
Indolence. Laziness, heedlessness.
Bhante?
Yeah.
So with the past tense prohibitive, so that past tense word is, what do you call it? It goes along with like the singular or the plural of, in this case, for example, saddam, for the first example? Or does it go with the number of people that the command is being issued to?
Say again?
So, with the negative prohibitive in the past tense, that past tense verb,
yeah,
singular versus plural, does it go with the number of people that's the command being issued to, or does it go with, for example, as in the first example, ma saddam akasi, does it go with the saddam in this case, which is
no, because the saddam is just the object, and so the verb has to go with the subject to whom it's intended. In this case, if it's one person, then he's saying Masadang Akasi, it's singular because he's speaking to one person. If he was speaking to a group of people, he would say Masadang Akasung, using a plural, the aorist plural.
Thank you.
Okay, now we come to, this is really a difficult one. Especially, I mean, it's difficult enough for native English speakers how to get this to Chinese speakers. Something called the middle voice. Okay, let me explain how the middle voice arose. You see, in Sanskrit, the distinction between the active voice and the middle voice is very rigorous, very clear. Boe, can you make a term in Chinese for middle voice? I'm trying to think. Zhong yu.
Zhong jian.
Zhong jian? What?
Middle is zhong jian, right? Boe?
I don't know what they translate. There must be a fixed form.
Yeah, there must be. Okay, let me explain first how it developed. We could see it in verbs in English. The difference between the active voice, maybe we would call it a reflexive verb, in that the action in the reflexive verb comes back to the subject. So we would say, John hit the dog. So X did something to Y. So here we call this a transitive verb. The action is flowing from the subject to the object. Maybe the distinction of active voice and middle voice corresponds to the difference between a transitive verb and an intransitive verb. So John hit the dog. This is active voice, a transitive verb. A or X did something to Y. Okay. Jane bought a book. Okay, so Jane does something to the book. Or even Jane is reading a book. Suki is studying Pali. So she's doing something. Of course, Pali isn't like a concrete object, but still grammatically it's an object. You are looking at the screen. Okay, and so these are all active voices or expressions using the active voice. With the middle voice or the reflexive voice, we might say, you see, in English we have to say this in an odd way. We would say, John is enjoying himself. You see, so John isn't doing something to somebody. He's not even doing something to himself, but he's just experiencing something. Or Jane grieves. Okay, so here, Jane isn't doing something to somebody or to something, but she's experiencing something. Okay, so originally in Sanskrit, different verb forms were used for the active voice and for the, we call this the reflexive or intransitive. And the verb forms used for the in the reflexive sense would be the middle voice. So this is what happened probably even in Vedic Sanskrit before the arising of Pali, and it continues very rigorously in classical Sanskrit. Can you explain that in Chinese even briefly?
Jenny 她买了一本书，有点像及物动词。 但是另外一种就是，我看魏中中翻成反身，但正好是反身动词。 就是像这样，他在，他，John is enjoying himself，那个句子里头，他并没有对别人做了什么事情，他也没有对自己做了什么事情，他就是纯粹的经验感受一件事情。 所以就说在梵文里头，最原始的梵文里头，它这里动词每个动词都有两个，一个是主动的，然后像及物动词一样，一个是对自己做了什么。那一直到在吠陀的时代也都还是这样，然后一直到经典梵文都还是这个样子。Okay,
so this wouldn't be considered actions. It was more like kind of a, I wouldn't say passive, but
they're like experiences that one undergoes. Like we could make, maybe this makes the difference clear. We say John enjoys classical music. Okay, so here we have the subject, John. The verb is enjoying, enjoys. Then the object is classical music. But if we say John is enjoying himself, well,
so it's not the best sentence. I think
John is happy.
Middle boys included the.
Let's say John rejoices. Okay, this is a good way to put it. John rejoices. Okay, so here he's not doing anything to anybody, not even to himself. So he's just, it indicates what he's experiencing.
In my Pali material, that the term is reflection.
Yeah, also it's called the reflexive voice. Reflexive, not in the sense, not like reflection, like thinking, but like reflection, like bending back. Because the action takes place within oneself. It's not an action going from subject to object. Okay. That is the way the distinction comes. And as I said, it's very rigorous in classical Sanskrit. But in Pali, we get off a bit easy in that what has happened in Pali, maybe because it's based on spoken languages, so the active voice has pretty much, or the forms of the active voice have pretty much taken over and dominated the whole field of verbs, except occasionally traces of the middle voice, a reflexive voice, remain. Occasionally we find them, especially in verse, because now in Pali the middle voice becomes a little bit elegant, a little bit
like formal language, elevated.
Elevated. I'm not getting the menu for what's going on here. When I click,
in Chinese, the
open the
reflection. Fanzhou, right?
Fanzhou.
Ah, here it is. Okay. But sometimes we see it in prose as well.
It says in the book it also seems to give an old-time flavor.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's why it's used in like an English verse, we have what?
Like the Canterbury Tales?
Like well, that's old English.
And more like 40 years ago.
Oh.
Very elevated language. People don't speak like that normally.
Or how about thou instead of you?
Is something like that, except of course thou is a pronoun rather than a verb. I was trying to think of a verb.
Thou dost.
Cometh.
Yeah, something like those forms. Cometh.
Doth. The lady doth confess too much.
Come forth. Come forth, Stephen.
Come forth.
It's like archaic.
Hold time, hold fashion.
Okay, let me get a good example in prose. Okay, here. This is from Mahanidana Sutta. So, tasmatiha nanda eseva hetu etang nidanang esa samudayo esa pacheo vinyanasa yadidang nama rupang. So therefore, Ananda, just this is the cause, this is the source, this is the origin, this is the condition for consciousness. Yadidang, that is name and form. Okay, now we have etavata ko Ananda, jayeta va, jiyeta va, miyeta va, chaveta va, upapajeta va. So, to this extent, Ananda, here we have, these are middle voice optatives. One might be born. You see, normally with the regular optative would be jayeya, jiyeya, mi mareya. But here it uses the middle voice, so we have these jayeta, jiyeta, miyeta. Instead of saying chaveya, one might perish, chaveta. And then instead of saying upapajeya, it says upapajeta. So these are sort of elegant middle voice forms, third person singular optatives. Okay, let's see what the text says. Okay, so we have Sanskrit had a system of middle or reflective endings in contrast with the active endings. The middle inflections, the inflections of the forms, in general, occurred with verbs that indicated actions done for the subject's own benefit, or which reflected back on the subject. That's why they're called reflexive, middle voice or reflexive. Okay, in Pali, the descendants of these endings sometimes occur, but they are relatively rare, particularly in prose, and are clearly, they're, by the time Pali arose, they were sort of dying out. And then in Pali, the difference between active and middle forms in meaning is also blurred, and the middle endings seem to be used simply to give an elevated or archaic flavor to the statement, and sometimes in poetry to fit the meter. Bo Wei, would you explain this in Chinese?
像像一点点偶尔使用而已，好像剩一些遗留这样子。那主要它是用在韵文里头，但还有时候散文也可以看得到。但是它使用的时候就是表达一种比较高雅、一种古典的一种感觉。但是后来渐渐，它的意思呢，连意思也都没有区分开来，就是最后就是只剩下它就是表达比较古典的意味而已。所以主要是在韵文里头使用。Okay,
and then as we said, they are relatively rare, but you should at least, you know, look over the table with them and be able to recognize them when you come across them.
Are there any examples besides, I mean, the few references in the, or occurrences in the suttas, or are there more examples that we would come across in the suttas, or
What do you mean more?
Because it says it's very rare, obviously, and
yeah, they're relatively rare, but you come across them, particularly in verse. I think we've already come across some of them, even though we didn't take the middle form systematically. Okay, then they go into just a little table showing the present and future middle forms, past tense middle forms. This will be driving you crazy. Yeah. You just look at this. Don't worry about it too much. Because I want to build up on the forms you come across frequently. I don't want your attention to get dispersed and for you to get discouraged thinking there are so many forms I have to learn.
Well, that's what I was getting at. Maybe we just skip over the section or...
No, I'm going to go very quickly. So just, we have the present and future, past tense middle forms, middle imperative. Wow.
Ante, could you just point out most frequently used ending that we should really remember to recognize?
I would say the third person forms are most common.
Okay.
I think third person singular most common. But we okay, then we'll jump to 4.5. This is an important point. That is, we already know that there's the present participle. One way to form the present participle is with this suffix mana. Hmm. Mana originally in Sanskrit was the middle voice way of forming the present participle. The active voice form was anta. The middle voice was mana. But in Pali, the dividing line between them gets pretty much broken down, and mana can be used with any verb in theory. So there's no sharp distinction in Pali between present participles using the ant and using the mana forms. Enough grammar?
You said we were getting over the hump. That's a big hump.
It's like Mount Everest. it doesn't seem like around the dam.
It's a camel, right? It's too hard.
We're still climbing.
No, these are. I mean, we've covered all of the main forms. These are like, I call them the little odds and ends of Pali grammar. Was somebody asking on the internet?
Yeah, I have a quick question.
Yeah.
So what's the difference between middle voice and what we did on page 127, you know, the passive verbs? It's still not very clear to me.
Passive verb.
Yeah, the passive verb is where the subject is being acted upon by something or someone else. Let us say, the Buddha is being venerated by the devotees. You see, here there's a subject and an object, but the subject is in a passive role in relation to somebody or something else. The Buddha is being venerated by the devotees. So here the Buddha is the subject, but he's in a passive position. The boy was bitten by the dog. Okay, so the boy is the subject, but he is in a passive role. He receives the object coming from the dog. And usually, in a passive sentence, the active figure is in the instrumental case. The gift was given by the benefactor. Okay, so the gift is the subject, but it's the gift plays a passive role. The benefactor is in the instrumental case, but it is really the active agent in that sentence. Got it?
So the subject is not the doer.
Yeah, the doer is really, in this case, coming in the instrumental.
Yeah. Subject is being acted upon.
Very clear about it. Thank you.
Okay, let us take a 10-minute break, then we can do some reading.
One question.
Okay.
Page 154, the example of a middle form, the manita.
Yeah.
This is from manyati, right?
Yeah.
Then could you explain? Because instead of a manyata, it's a manita. Is that the way it's supposed to be? Ita, at the bottom. Examples, manita. He thought manito.
Apparently.
So, above there, it doesn't show E. It's just ta, to, but actually it's ita, ito, something like that.
I'd have to look this up.
Okay.
Okay, let's take a break. Okay, it's